This meeting to order of the Lincoln County Board of Commissioners. This is Wednesday, June 20th. It's 9:30 a.m. And we are in the Commissioners' Room in the Lincoln County Courthouse. First item on the agenda is to establish a quorum. We have all three commissioners present representing a quorum. Next item would be the adoption of the consent calendar. These are items of a routine nature or items that have come before the commissioners before. There's an item you wish to highlight, you may do so. Otherwise, I'll entertain a motion for approval.
Move for approval of the consent calendar as presented.
Second.
Moved and seconded. All those in favor say aye.
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 That motion carries. Next item on the agenda is a decision item. This is the order approving the Nonprofit Social Service Agency Allocation Program funding for the fiscal year 2018-2019.
Mr. Chair.
Yes, sir.
Could I have a moment on this subject?
You may.
At the last meeting, Commissioner Thompson asked the question of whether or not any other counties in the state of Oregon are doing a program like ours, using general fund money to support nonprofits. And I did send a survey to every county commissioner in the state. I heard back from 16 of the 36 counties. 10 are not. But six actually do have similar general fund grant programs to support operation of nonprofits. It ranges from just $2,000 in Malheur County to a high of $300,000 in Clackamas County. Now this I found interesting, but maybe if you, not surprising. Grant County, $80,000. Harney County, 100,000. Two small frontier counties actually making a significant contribution to their local nonprofits. And I imagine, you know, our nonprofits struggle in this community, but I would think in a frontier county, it's even more of a challenge. But I think that's interesting that we seem to be in the minority in doing this.
So could I ask you a question?
Sure.
About that? Because
sure.
I saw your.
Yeah.
Form go out. It's really informative. Were the other counties aware of what we were doing?
Some of them were. Actually, the judge of Gillam County contacted me. You know, he's like the elected full-time chair. And he was interested, and we spent a lot of time talking about our process because, again, they're not putting general fund into their nonprofits, but because they've got the large landfill over there, they get something like $4 million a year in tipping fees, and they're putting a chunk of that into serving nonprofits. So he was interested in learning more about our committee, how it's structured, who's on the committee, what kind of criteria they use. So he found the conversation really helpful.
Good. Well, thank you.
Mm-hmm. You said six counties are using
six out of the 16 who responded.
Are yeah. using general funds?
Yes.
Okay.
It was Clatsop, Clackamas, Yamhill, Harney, Malheur, and Grant.
Okay.
But it sounds like our funds at our level, looking at those,
yeah.
we're pretty much in line.
Oh yeah, if not ahead. So.
All right. Good information.
Yep.
Thank you, Commissioner.
Okay. Well, with that, I would be happy to make a motion for approving the recommended Nonprofit Social Service Agency funding for fiscal year 2000. Well, actually, it should be 2018-19.
Which is what I read.
Yeah. Okay.
I'll second it.
All right. Any other discussion? And again, this is for the fiscal year 2018-2019. All mm-hmm. those in favor say aye.
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 That motion carries. Next item is an order approving the 2018-2019 fee schedule. Again, this has also come before us previously.
No further input. We didn't receive any further input.
I didn't receive any.
Okay.
All right. I move we approve the changes proposed for the 2018-19 fee schedule.
Second.
Moved and seconded. Any other discussion? All those in favor say aye.
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 That motion carries. Next item is a ratification of the collective bargaining agreement with the Federation of Parole and Probation Officers, FAPO, for the period July 1st, 2018 through June 30, 2021, which is a 3-year period.
Commissioner,
we've
completed negotiations.
Correct you. It's FAPO, not FAPO.
Yeah.
Oh. Gee, and I had to find my glasses. All right, thank you.
So, Commissioners, we've reached a tentative agreement between the negotiating teams within the parameters of what you gave us to negotiate. This is a three-year contract. Actually, this is the first of several contracts that will be coming your direction before the beginning of the fiscal year. We'll bring some more back to you next week. Just for information, this includes, it's a three-year contract, and it includes a 2.5% COLA.
Each of the three years.
Right. And other than that, it's pretty much the same contract that we've had in the past.
But it did agree to some of the changes in our personnel policy, changes in our finance policy.
It does. And that includes that we're changing up our payroll schedule. That's one of the things that they've agreed to. And then also the process by which we pay reimbursements. Thank you.
Any other comments, questions? Nope. Commissioners?
Nope. I would move to ratify the July 1st, 2018 to June 30th, 2021 collective bargaining agreement between the county and the Federation of Parole and Probation Officers, FOPO, as tentatively agreed to by the county negotiating team, and to authorize necessary signatures on the final agreement to complete its execution. This action is contingent on the final ratification of the agreement by FOPO members.
Okay. Second.
Moved and seconded. Any other discussion? All those in favor say aye.
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 That motion carries. All right. We'll move on to some discussion items. The first one is application for a shoreline protection structure in the Lincoln Beach area and with public access. And this will be presented, I believe, by Director Kenyon. And it looks like Director Husing is coming to offer support.
Good morning, Commissioners. Last week, I received an application for shoreline protection structure, which is riprap, there's a group in the Lincoln Beach area that is applying for a permit to install this structure. The county actually has a public right-of-way and access to the beach there. It's this property, and this property are part of the application process. And there is this 10-foot right-of-way public easement that leads to the beach right in the middle of it. Therefore, because we have 10-foot frontage there, we've been asked to sign off on the application. I was named as representative of Lincoln County, and so I conferred with Mr. Belmont, and he said I should come present and get authorized by the board to actually sign off on the application. Question?
Well, this is west of Highway 101.
It is.
And I've always taken a policy of not giving up any easement west of Highway 101.
Yeah, we're actually not giving up any easement. Okay, basically, all we're doing is we're signing off as part of the ownership in that area. And what they have designed is it's actually going to reestablish this beach access. Because as you can see on the right, this here is actually where the 10-foot right-of-way actually exists. And then it's about a 12-foot vertical to the beach. So it is not actually physically possible to access the beach at this point in time within that right-of-way. And so what's going to happen there is the riprap's going to start at the property to the far right and work its way all the way around that point up to the third property. And when they get to that 10-foot right-of-way, they're going to incorporate flat stone in the riprap wall to rebuild that access and provide access down to the beach at that point.
I have a question, but for Mr. Husing.
Sir?
Under State Planning Goal 18, I think, I've been at this job long enough. I know that people can argue endlessly about the interpretation of certain words and phrases, but it sets out pretty clear criteria for when riprap should or should not be authorized. And is it your professional opinion or belief that this application would meet Goal 18 criteria?
Mr. Chairman, for the record, Ono Husing, Planning Director. It clearly meets Goal 18 because, just to remind you, and you've followed this closely over the years, properties up and down the Oregon coast, because of this January 1st, 1977, the cutoff date, If you were built and committed to development prior to that date, you are eligible under Goal 18 to just talk to OPRD, the state parks, about getting an ocean shore alteration permit. Yes, very often a riprap permit. So, of course, that was the threshold consideration when we looked at these properties, and so Roy came in to speak with me about this. The properties are Goal 18 eligible. They were, and that's clear on our inventory given to us by the state of Oregon, that they are eligible. The curious wrinkle to this is that years ago, recall, there was quite a curious discussion that occurred over the Spencer Creek Bridge about whether public access is Goal 18 eligible or not. And so what the state did in their infinite wisdom was kick the can down the road and leave places like Highway 101 and a little miserable little right-of-way. I shouldn't call it a miserable right-of-way. It's going to be improved. It's going to be beautiful. But that little tiny right-of-way is also has a neutral, undeclared status. It's not in or out. So we made sure we... Now, our opinion was, given this kind of strange, curious non-designation, what was its status? And so we've conferred... We felt, given that it's surrounded by eligible properties... Intuitively, if one had to make a call, it would also be deemed eligible, but we've made sure because we make sure we coordinate everything with our friends at State Parks and DLCD on these matters, because we don't want to surprise each other. Mm-hmm. I've done the consultations with our state partners, and they agree with our call in this case that it would be declared eligible for this purpose. Now, that doesn't mean they still, once this gets submitted, and this is my closing, to put a capstone on that, this application signed by us, so it'll be signed in effect as the property owner, because Roy's the keeper of the right-of-ways, but it will also be signed in the affirmative by me as the planning director under the coastal zone certification that it's eligible. So there'll actually be two signatures by the county. And to close, that doesn't mean you get the riprap permit. That means you can, with all the documentation, you go to Jay Sennewald at OPRD, and he makes the call ultimately looking at their administrative rules.
Okay, that's important to me, the key question, because I think you know I am absolutely not a fan of riprap. I think it creates more problems than it solves, but if these folks are legally eligible under the rules, then that's what I needed to know.
My question is to Roy, because I like short answers. Can we put in the contract the date this has to be completed by, and that the trail will be completed?
Actually, it's already.
I'm afraid
it's already part of the application. It gives a start date and a finish date.
Okay.
And the part that the stairway that's good, that's would be if it's if this is accepted, it's already part of the plan. And so basically, all the footwork has been done, but because there's that 10-foot right-of-way, the county has been asked to sign off on the application process.
And my other question is, a lot of these right-of-ways lose maintenance over time. They say the steps deteriorate and stuff. Is it written in there that the maintenance will be performed by who and how?
That's a good question. Because I actually don't know.
Let's find out.
Well, it's part of the entire project. So whatever guidelines are given to these three property owners as far as maintenance to the riprap structure, we don't typically maintain. Well, I shouldn't say typically. We don't maintain these public beach accesses.
But we need to make sure who's going to perform the maintenance in the future, because. Since it's next to a beach, waves may deteriorate part and move the rocks or change the steps. So is it possible in the contract or somewhere in there to specify who the maintenance is? And
I can try to find that out for you. But as I said earlier, it's a 12-foot vertical drop now. There hasn't been anybody that's been maintaining it up to this point.
And at the risk of providing a long answer that would be unwelcome, as a practical matter, applicants have a strong interest once they get permission to do this. It's very expensive to do what they want to do, and they want to protect their properties. So what we don't usually see is once you go through, run this gauntlet, that they just sort of say, oh, I'm not really sure I want to do it after all, let it slide. So I suspect they're going to go do it. And they're the one, but, you know, they pay for it. This is, it's enough to encumber part of the public's beach, but by God, there isn't a dollar's worth of public money that goes into this. So I suspect that, you know, ultimately they would be the ones maintaining this, but I think it's an interesting question you raised for Roy to put into the discussion.
Could I ask Mr. Belmont a question related to this, please?
Please do.
Okay, I hate to say I'm thinking like a lawyer sometimes, but say we sign off on this application, the state approves it, this stairway gets built, someone is injured on the stairway, does this expose the county to liability since we essentially signed off on the application?
No.
Okay.
The responsibility for the beachward side of this is with the state of Oregon.
Okay. Okay.
Good. Okay, and just to clarify, so we're actually an applicant with the three property owners
the
state.
So you sign the application as for the county as property owner, and then if Otto confirms that it meets all, he signs as planning director that the application.
This is an unusual circumstance that you basically have two different parts of the county signing off on this application, and what makes this different is the right of way.
Yeah. Right.
So what I'm trying to clarify is the fact that we're one of four parties really that are a part of this application to the state.
That's correct.
The state will look at the request for all four entities when they make their decision.
It's a package deal.
Yeah. Right.
But we're not committed financially.
Right. Okay. Any other questions?
No. I'm comfortable in us signing off on this as a property owner.
Commissioner Thompson?
No public input?
Not, you may do so at constituent input.
Because if we do sign off, then it doesn't become official until I assume we adopt an order next week.
What about handicap accessibility?
I'm sorry.
What about handicap accessibility?
No, not
handicap. Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
Well, I thought there was another question.
Well, Mr. Chairman, in terms of public comment about the ultimate riprap permit, once this goes to state parks, there will be a window for public comment because that's the actual permit.
Yeah.
This is all leading up
Is applying.
There will be a public. Yeah. Very public, posted, appealable time period before the issuance of this permit.
Okay.
Thank you.
All right. That'll come back to us?
Yes, come back next week.
Next item for discussion is an update on the vacation rental dwelling licensing and enforcement. Come forward. Identify yourselves for the record, please.
Right. Good morning.
Good morning.
I'm Lisa Combs. I serve as your support services director for the Lincoln County Sheriff's Office. And present with me this morning is Lieutenant Brian Cameron, who serves as your patrol commander. We were asked to provide an update on the current short-term rental licensing program adopted by Ordinance 487, and it had an effective date of December 1st of 2016. At that time, the Sheriff's Office was tasked with acting as the licensing authority for the program. I primarily oversee the administrative procedures associated with the program, and Lieutenant Cameron oversees the compliance deputies who actually are in the field conducting the inspections at the residences. We typically meet with County Council pretty much quarterly to discuss the program as it progresses forward, any issues that arise, or just clarification on interpretations of the ordinance, and to troubleshoot any of our processes. I've provided you with a handout that outlines our current statistics. We currently have 461 active short-term rentals, and of those, 36 of them are pending new licenses. And 53 of those are pending renewals. So in other words, they've been licensed once, they've expired, they've come back to us, and now they're pending a renewal. 36 of those are expired licenses. So they obtained a license, it's expired, they're now in a non-compliance status, and we will be contacting them regarding their non-compliance to determine if they are still operating or if they're operating in a non-compliance status. potential unlicensed properties, we are notified occasionally by third parties. It's usually neighbors that are wanting to report that their neighbors are unlicensed. So we have about 19 properties that we're currently following up on to determine if they actually are in a non-compliant state. And then we work hand in hand with the treasurer's office because the transient room tax is a requirement for this program. So they have provided us with about 34 properties that we've identified are not short-term rentals. We have determined that they're unlicensed short-term rentals. However, it's unknown whether or not they fall within the regulations for that. So that is on our radar, and it's a project that we will be working on to determine that. One item associated with the ordinance is it initially allowed owners of kind of larger properties as a one-time option, and they had to submit their application by December 31st of 2016 if they wanted to be considered to operate at a maximum occupancy above the norm. So the norm is 16. We only have 6 grandfathered properties in the county at this time, and I think the maximum on those, or the maximum one, is maybe 20. Moving, if you have any questions, feel free to interrupt and ask. But
I will have some, but I'll go
okay. Ahead. All right. Okay. Moving on to the complaints, we didn't incorporate a database to manage our data until about September of 2017. So the complaints are not documented as early on as well as they probably are now. So I can't really give you a number on how many we've had, but I would guess that we've probably only had complaints on maybe 5% of the properties that we're actively managing. Some of the typical complaints are neighbors saying their neighbors aren't licensing, they don't have their posting requirements up. Parking sometimes is an issue, especially on some of those narrow and roads like in Glen Eden Beach, especially in the summer when you've got a lot of people in our county vacationing. And very few noise and trespass complaints come our way. We try to respond on a daily basis to these. None of these have moved into a formal ordinance required complaint process. They've all been handled one-on-one as we kind of work through the process. At this time, there have not been any citations issued for violations, and we have not done any revocations on licenses. So for the time being, people are complying when they're notified that they're not in compliance. One of the number one complaints of the owners who are actually operating the short-term rentals is the outside posting requirement of the local contact name and phone number. They've reiterated to us frequently that they feel that this puts them at more of a risk for burglaries. They think that it invites crimes because it's noticing that it's basically advertising, in their opinions. So as I was preparing for this presentation, I went ahead and I ran our residential burglary statistics from December 1st and through today. We had 162 residential burglaries that we reported. 6 of those were actually licensed vacation rentals. However, as I was going through this, I also noticed that there were 4 burglaries on unlicensed vacation rentals. So basically, at the time of the burglaries, they weren't licensed, and then they later became licensed. So they weren't posting at that time. So I'm not sure I'm seeing a lot of evidence that would substantiate the posting is creating additional risk at this time. Now that the program is in full swing, we're conducting renewals, and we're kind of seeing how much time it's taking us, it's a lot more work than what we probably initially thought it was going to be, especially from an administrative perspective. So we're constantly trying to troubleshoot with council on ways that we can better manage the program, better use our resources, or whether it's personnel or materials and supplies. We've thrown out the idea of maybe looking at a short-term rental software that they and they're provided to municipalities or other governments that are managing these types or regulating short-term rentals. The program would upload our GIS data. It would potentially identify non-compliant properties for us. It would assist us with managing the data, creating more of an auto creation of the expiration notices. And there may be a potential for the owners to even apply online for the licensing as a future endeavor. There's also a module that's part of it that the treasurer could use if they wanted to add the transient tax piece for them to that. There are two cities in Oregon that use it, are kind of what they call their power users, and that's Garibaldi and Seaside, and so we do plan on making a trip up there to see how they're using it, how they like it, maybe vet the product. It's not inexpensive, so we want to make sure that it meets our needs if we decided to go down that road. The last thing that we've been throwing around with council is maybe incorporating a two-year renewal versus a one-year renewal. We have found that as we're constantly doing renewals and renewals, it's tying us up so that we can't do as much enforcement as we'd like. So we really are trying to weigh the pros and cons of whether or not that's a viable option. So that's kind of...
So when we started, we weren't really sure, how it was going to fall for patrol and Lisa's shop. What has turned out is that about 99% of it is falling on Lisa and 1% on patrol. She's doing 99% of the talking. I'm doing about 1% today. So it kind of worked out that way. We're running three on-call deputies, and they're retired sheriff's deputies that have worked for us or for other agencies. Their main goal is compliance, and with that, they're trying to work with everybody to make sure that we can get to where we want to be, which is everything squared away. The end goal isn't necessarily citations, but certainly we would look at that if we can't get somebody to come into compliance. But on that, it's reduced some of the calls we get at night. People actually have a place now, instead of calling a patrol deputy, taking them out of his district to work with a short-term rental, they know who to call as far as getting some satisfaction from the property manager or calling the sheriff's office the next day and talking to our short-term rental people. So it's helped in that, too, for patrol staffs.
Mr. Chair.
Yes.
First, I want to thank you both for this report. I was the one who requested it, and I'd like to suggest that maybe we have at least a yearly check-in from now on how the program's doing. This is very helpful, very informative. You know, we went through, I think, wasn't it, Mr. Belmont, about a three-year process to craft these regulations, and it sounds like we've reached something that's largely working well. You know, I think it's interesting, and this was the one point our board split on adopting this, was the idea of offering a limited grandfathering program, and I know some members of the public were very upset that we did that, but finding out that only 6 of 461 active short-term rentals were grandfathered at larger size, I think shows that it was a very narrow set of criteria for that. The one question that I would have on this was, during those multiple rounds of public meetings and input, we kept hearing from people, especially living in areas with large concentration of vacation rentals, was that we were going to find all kinds of licensed rentals. And I know it's hard to come up with exact numbers, but if you look, go back, like before the program started, the number of properties paying transient room tax versus the number who are licensed now. Have we seen any kind of a significant increase in people paying the tax and licensing? Do you have any sense of that?
Based on my conversations with the treasurer's office and Mr. Belmont, I think there has been an increase in the transient room tax paid because of the regulation.
Okay. That's good to know.
Commissioner Thompson.
Yes.
satisfied.
I have a couple of questions. Just to help me understand the math, there are 461 active short-term rentals. I'm assuming within that 461, there are a large number that are not pending renewals, pending new licenses, expired licenses. So it's kind of wherever they are in the annual process.
Correct. So if you subtract out the ones below,
right,
those are basically all compliant properties. They're licensed and they're within the restrictions.
Okay. And then you say properties paying the transient room tax is 34, but those are...
They have a
ones?
Well, what it is the treasurer's office has provided us with addresses that have set up transient room tax accounts.
Right.
However, we've not had a chance yet to determine, are they actually short-term rentals or are they something else?
Okay.
And are we even regulating them? So we don't know yet. It's just we haven't had time yet, but it is a project that's pending.
Yeah, so that, okay, in effect, would be part of the enforcement to determine whether or not they are VRDs. Okay, and then the grandfather properties, has there been a change in the number of properties since the deadline? In other words, of the original six?
I think that there was more, but I think one was sold. And so since the ordinance indicates that the licenses are non-transferable, they start over, so then they would not have the ability to grandfather.
They could renew, but they would have to be in compliance with a 16 maximum occupancy.
Correct.
Okay. All right, and then you mentioned the cost of software, which frankly on the surface sounds like it might be a value. Estimated cost?
They quoted me $20,000 a year.
All right. Any other questions, commissioners?
No. Thank you for the information.
Good information.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. All right. We're down to reports, commissioners.
I don't have anything today.
Okay. Comment. Julie, we covered that first thing before you came in the room.
Okay. Yeah.
Good work.
We approved
it.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. No, we don't need more.
You're excused.
Okay, thank you.
But you're welcome to stay if you'd like.
Thank you.
We're going to discuss this.
Yeah, I thought allow the commissioners to make reports, and then let's have a discussion on the treasurer interviews that we have this morning at starting at 8 o'clock. But other reports from commissioners?
Not for me.
No. Okay. Then... comments are on the treasurer interviews for the public. We had a public session this morning, started at 8 o'clock, interviewed three candidates that had applied for appointment to the treasurer position. That's an appointment that would be effective through the end of the calendar year, and who would continue beyond the end of the calendar year would be determined through the election in November. We interviewed three candidates, Kim Herring, Robert...
McAfee,
Robert, I couldn't remember your name, and Jane Welch, and commissioners, your comments, thoughts? Okay.
Well, could I? Oh, okay. Well, I think we had three very solid applicants. Robert McAfee is currently managing our food service program in the jail. He has... management, fiscal experience, I think some very good, solid ideas about leading a team, but he does not have the experience in the treasurer's office that the other two candidates have. Kim Herring, before she moved upstairs to this office, was our board executive assistant, so we have experience working personally with Kim. We know that she is extremely diligent, well-organized, hard worker, articulate, and I think she had some very credible answers to our questions as well. Jane Welch has been in the office 14 years. She has essentially, you know, this office has two main functions, treasurer and tax collector. And she has been running the tax collector function for several years now. And I saw in her answers the greatest depth of understanding of what this job entails. So, you know, personally, you know, I think Jane is the strongest of three good candidates.
Commissioner Thompson.
Well, my comment is, if you want to not disrupt the office, Jane's, you know, is a good candidate. She's going to have make it flow through.
Mm-hmm.
But we did not ask if people were planning on running. Or, of course, people can't change their mind. So in November, it's a different game.
Right.
But in the transition for the short period of time, which would only be 4 months,
Well, it's served through
the December,
so it's a six-month appointment.
6 months.
Whoever's appointed in, or elected in November goes in January.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. Excuse me. I was thinking the election date is
right
down
sure.
to,
That's,
to the day of appointment. You're absolutely right. It's 6 months. So she seemed to know how to make the existing office function and keep functioning.
Mm-hmm.
Kim showed a lot of skills. And,
yes.
And I thought in the management of people, I thought Rob had showed some answers and skills. But so it's open for election.
Right.
And nothing says that these people will run or won't run. So that's what the election process is about.
Yeah. Whoever we don't choose, they can run. Anybody else who meets legal qualifications can run.
Right.
So.
Yeah, I think I share basically the same thoughts. I thought Robert's answers as far as his understanding and experience in management was impressive. Certainly, we know Kim. She is well-organized and diligent and did a very good job for us. But I also felt that Jane offered the most comprehensive answers. I thought her answers showed a greater understanding of the intricacies of the department. She's, I believe, been in the department 14 years. So I felt when you looked at her experience, her understanding of the variety of the different responsibilities of the treasurer's office, I felt she certainly seemed to have some strengths there. And I think from an overall standpoint, I would support her appointment to serve out the remainder of the calendar year as treasurer.
It sounds like there's a consensus to make the appointment of Jane Welchel prepare and order for your formal adoption next week. It might help to let the current treasurer know which direction you're going here so they can assist in the transition as we go forward.
Okay.
But we'll have an order for you to adopt officially next week.
Okay.
Could you notify her of our consensus?
Well, and notify the three candidates.
We'll notify the candidates,
All right, and I guess for the record, also in the interviews was Assistant County Counsel Jerry Herbridge and the Director of Personnel, Mike Hefford. So
Herford.
That's what I said, Herford?
Oh, I thought you said Hefford.
Herford? I'm tongue-tied this morning.
Yeah.
Okay, so anything else on commissioner reports? Counsel Belmont.
I was going to give you an update. I know we have folks here that want to talk
Absolutely.
About the biosolids issue.
Sure.
And so I'd like to provide a little update for everybody. So, and then hopefully that will engender some additional conversations and discussions in here. Since I think we had a lot of folks in here the last time we had indicated...
We should get that fixed.
But I'm wearing different shoes now.
Excuse me. Not a cell phone either. It's
the it's a desk
conference,
phone sitting there.
Conference line.
Yeah.
So,
yes.
Okay. The commissioners have provided a letter to the cities of the county and the other entities which are engaged in the treatment of biosolids, asking them to halt the land application to August 31st while we went through some efforts to gather all the parties together, gather additional information together, to talk about alternatives, to talk about options, things that can be done. And also to explore our role in a regulatory process here. What could we do or not do? What are our options? And that letter went out on June 4th, and it's been received by all the cities and the counties. We haven't actually received any official responses yet, but I do know that the cities are taking a look at this. Both the cities of Walport and Toledo actually discussed this at public meetings. I can tell you as a general rule that my informal conversations with various representatives of the entities are everybody is very willing to come to the table and talk about this, to bring the information that they've got in terms of their current practices, protocols, their testing, what they're going to do. They understand this is an issue that needs to be addressed on a broader basis here, but also within their own municipalities. So, again, at this point, we haven't had any official confirmations on action they're going to take. But we do at least have them aware of the situation, and they're having that discussion. So Toledo had a meeting last week. I know Casey Miller, on behalf of the county, attended that particular meeting. And they actually brought down Paul Kennedy from DEQ to have a discussion with the community there. That's something that we want to do, but on a broader level. I don't want to just have Mr. Kennedy come to one of our meetings. I'd rather have that with the operators and providers here, the other stakeholders, the public. We make sure that we have a broad base of the people who are involved in this problem so we can get to the root of what's going on and what the solutions might be. So that's what we're intending to do coming up here. My understanding from Toledo is that they were going to submit a new land application, and that based on the meeting that they had there, they have temporarily halted that. They're not proceeding with that particular application. I haven't heard that officially yet. I've heard that unofficially, that that's what they're doing while they look into this issue and look into it with us. I did learn that the city of Lincoln City and the city of Yawhats are not currently engaged in land application. Both of those entities actually take their biosolids and currently go into landfills. Although, to be fair, I know that Yawhats has a site up the Yawhats River which they could use for land application. I don't think they're currently using it. They're not intending to use it at this point. Lincoln City, their approach is they are looking at actually adding additional treatment capacity. I think it's a centrifuge is the term, and it's a drying mechanism there. They want to increase their capacity to dry the biosolids and actually continue, and as they explore other options, but to continue to take that to a landfill. They're not intending to do any land application in the near future. The city of Newport is the entity that has a what's called a Class A treatment facility. So that is something different from the others, which are Class B, in terms of what they do to treat that particular effluent. And while they have some sites within the city itself, actually out near the airport, they do have a site in the Logsdon area, is what I understand. And there was
where they have a permit.
Where they have a permit, and they have some plans to potentially to apply biosolids, their Class A biosolids, in that particular area. However, based on the fact that we've requested that they not do that, they are looking into the ability of not doing this while we have further discussions on this, where they bring more information to us, to the community, to everybody. And so they're looking at, they didn't commit to it. The city council, as I understand it, is going to consider this matter at their meeting in July. And I think it's the 16th, because they don't meet on the 4th of July when they have that holiday in there. So the next meeting, July 16th, and they're going to talk about this particular issue. And they're looking into trying to delay any application they do out on that site in Celeste.
Did they tell you what the site was?
All I know is Logsdon. We'll talk a little bit. You can come up when we're done. And I don't know specifically where it is. They said Logsdon area. That's what I know. Who I have not had contact with and don't know specifically what's happening right now are the cities of Depot Bay and Celeste, which of course I think is part of they're the ones who are actively engaged, as I understand right now, in the land application process. Although I was gathering an understanding, I've got calls into Depot Bay to confirm this, that they may be done for the time being with doing land application out there. I don't want to say that's absolutely right. I want to get some confirmation. But I can tell you, just in brief conversations I had, this is what a city councilor related to that. They are interested in also coming to the table and having these discussions. So I think that to the benefit of the group that's brought this forward, we've gotten everybody's attention. Everybody is saying, we've got to sit down and talk about this. So that's the things that are happening sort of on a city level, on a county level. What we want to do is we want to convene this larger meeting. And again, we could bring in Paul Kennedy from DEQ, as Toledo did, to have a meeting one-on-one. But, you know, since we're not an actual producer of these particular biosolids, we want to have, so we can ask questions and get answers, we want to have the people here in the meeting that are actually doing the work here, and are actually making the applications. And what I'm finding, again, is the cities are all but very willing to send representatives. And I'm hoping they send policymakers, you know, the counselors or managers or whoever does the policy, as well as the technical people who are actually engaged in the process. That's the meeting we're trying to convene here. We're looking at convening that sometime in July to get everybody together here. But we want to have more people at the table, and including stakeholders. You know, obviously we'll get some people who are in the land application business, either but doing the applications or receiving that. Yeah. They'll also come in and talk to us, too. So we do know that the tribe has weighed in at this. I haven't actually seen the letter yet that the tribe is generating, but they've expressed concerns about what's happening out there. And we'll be getting some additional information from the tribe. I think the tribe would be another partner that we want to have at the table, especially as we talk possibly about some solutions, maybe some regional treatment kinds of ideas. There may be a place for the tribe and some of the property they own as a partner in doing some of the solutions to look at this on a more countywide basis. I do want to note that we have two law students from the University of Oregon who are interning with the county at this time. We've assigned them to look at the particular legal issues around this. They've been doing research on both what is the county's role as well as what is the state and federal role in the regulation of this particular activity and what can we do. And I will say that preliminarily, again, as I had indicated at the front of this, I think that there are roadblocks for our ability to prohibit this particular activity of land application. But as we've approached with the cities here, there may be ways that we can approach this from a different standpoint. And I will tell you this, in my conversations, one of the things that I'm discovering, and I think it's really clear, is while there may be a regulatory scheme out there may be rules and laws and practices out there, how they're actually being put in place differs. It seems to differ quite a bit between the various entities here. And that side that we were talking about in terms of are we even complying with existing law and the way things are done, and is enforcement taking place, and how is that enforcement? Is the testing occurring? Is appropriate testing? Those are the kinds of things that we're really focusing in on to say we want answers to that. And how can we step in possibly to make sure that if for some reason we can't write the laws, how do we make sure that the laws are in place, are being enforced properly, and the activities are done properly? That's at least an area we're exploring to look at that enhanced enforcement activity.
Wayne, we've got a problem here that may or may not exist. And to me, it's fine to go talk to the cities and play the game. But the only evidence is going to be when you take water samples downriver during a maximum rainstorm, which is not this time of year, and in the wells that are within 1,000 feet of that. And until we have that kind of data, it's hardcore, it's just hypothetical.
I couldn't agree more, actually. And that's one of the things, if I get to the end of it, one of the discussions we've had of the options, and one of the things that we as a county can bring to the table to assist in that process. So let me just talk a little bit more on the regional, state, and national level, what we're doing, and then get back to that particular issue. So I did discover on a regional level that Oregon Cascades West Council of Governments, which is made up of Lincoln County, Lane County, Benton County, and all the cities and public entities, including the tribe, are members of that particular group. They've actually begun a project. They were a little bit more expansive in their project, but they're looking at some regional solid waste issues, and that's now going to include looking at biosolids as one of the as a waste issue as part of what they're looking at. And specifically, what they're trying to talk about is, you know, some of the options and opportunities to deal with this problem. Talk about development of regional facilities. You need to have the economies of scale. You need to have actually the amount of waste coming in to make it financially feasible to do some of the treatment processes here. What they're looking at doing is trying to look at that particular issue from a more regional level to say, maybe what we end up doing is developing a facility that serves a 3-county area. So instead of actually land applying it out here, we take it to a location, maybe centrally located, maybe in one of the counties here, and actually do additional processing and treatment and go from there. But if it's a facility and rather than each entity having to spend the money and develop that, they can do it on a regional basis. So they're taking in on that effort, and they're looking at some possible economic regional solutions. On the state level, I know we've contacted at least 5 state legislators, as I understand it, and continue to reach out to them to see what they're doing on a state level. And to talk about our concerns with the adequacy of staffing and funding for the programs they have in place. know, is DEQ may have some regulatory authority, but they're given, you know, no resources to do what they need to do. And so we need to have them at the table. When we convene our meeting here, we're going to make sure that we at least have our local representatives, Representative Gomberg and Senator Roblin, or people from their office, involved in those conversations, because we need to talk about maybe we need some changes to state law. And we need some differences there that can apply this thing, because it's not just a problem in Lincoln County, it's a problem everywhere, so that we can apply that on a larger level. And then finally, on a national level, we are making contact with Senators Wyden and Merkley and Representative Schrader to talk about this, because remember how this works. It's a top-down system. This actually starts at the Environmental Protection Agency. That's where the original regulatory scheme comes, and then states pick up and do that program, but under EPA guidelines. So this is actually something that has national concern and national implications, and we want to make sure they're involved in the discussions and in the conversation. But let me go back to I'll tell you the one thing that I have found in terms of that, and one of the things that we can really bring to the table, I think, is actually addressing what Commissioner Thompson talked about, and that is that there really isn't, I mean, just what I'm hearing, and again, we'll have to get all the information, but there isn't adequate testing of what's going on here. There isn't an adequate understanding. You need that kind of additional testing. And what I have heard from some of the entities out here is they're actually willing to step up and do testing beyond what is required by law. And that testing doesn't mean just at their sites or just even at the application area, but testing at the watersheds, testing at wells is what we might talk about. So we can actually get a better feel for what's going on here. And I think there's a place that the county can play a part. I know that the City of Newport has talked about doing some additional testing on the Siletz River, and I think that near some of these application sites, do some baseline testing. We could actually partner with them and get some additional testing done. And you're right, the protocol has to test it at appropriate times and appropriate locations for the appropriate constituents. You know, what you're actually looking for in the testing. But that's something I think that we can bring to the table, increase the amount of information that we've got, you know, determine what's happening with these sources, and then that helps us with the regulation of these particular activities when we've got that base information that assists us. In addition, we've explored an option that Benton County has done, and we may look at an option of applying for a grant, and I think it's from the Oregon Health Authority.
Correct.
It would be to actually allow us to get some funding to do some individual well testing. This would be on private properties that we can go out and we can, you know, try and choose these in appropriate locations where they may have impacts adjacent to biosolid areas or even within those areas, those kinds of things, and provide some additional testing and baseline testing to see what's happening at those sites that are immediately impacted by this.
Could I say a little more about that? I want to thank Ms. George for calling attention for me to the fact that this program existed, and I've had a conversation with the environmental health manager of Benton County. It's not a large program, unfortunately. They're only, depending on funding, they're only able to do 40 to 60 private wells a year, and that's versus 10,000 private wells in Benton County. But they prioritize vulnerable populations, and I would love to see if we could get something similar up and going. So I know the basic information has been conveyed to all three commissioners, and now my next step will be to share that with Interim HHS Director Rebecca Austin and to encourage her to look at pursuing that grant program. Benton County has said if we want to get this going, they'll provide consultation to us to help us set it up.
Actually, I'll be meeting with Director Austin later today, so with your permission, I'll at least approach
the please subject. Do, and if she's willing to at least explore it, I will forward all the material I've collected so far from Benton. Because you need funding, you know, first to pay for the tests themselves, and then for some staff time, essentially for somebody to, you know, collect the samples, send them to the lab, and then once they come back, helping the property owner understand what the results mean and what corrective steps they might want to take.
We can certainly get her involved. Commissioner Thompson.
So, I get some information by one of you that talked about wells that were being sampled in Eastern Oregon.
No, this was in Benton County.
Benton County only?
Because, this is a Benton County program, and they have not had a lot of, they don't have a real good base to settle on, but to work from. But their public health director told me if you can project out the limited results they have to all of those 10,000 wells in Benton County, he said probably 300 of them to 400 of them have arsenic levels that are unsafe for human consumption.
And arsenic is a very poisonous
yes.
one. Now, that isn't
yes.
necessarily a material that came from biosolids. That's,
yeah.
That may just come from the rock itself, the groundwater, or mm-hmm. contamination.
Yeah.
And that's what worries me, is if we do have water that's contaminated, how are we going to proceed? Now I'm going to look at Wayne to answer this. To handle it, if we do test this and we find that this stuff is contaminated, what happens so many times, water contaminated, everybody just looks away and walks away. How do we deal with it?
Well, I think that's where you design an appropriate testing methodology. And what you're trying to do is not just see what's there, but what's causing that. That's,
right.
that's what you have to do as part of the process there. I think you can talk about it. It's interesting that in the course of our discussions around all of this, there was the huge issue with Salem's water and Detroit Lake and an algae bloom in Detroit Lake. I don't know all the facts around it, but I don't think that was necessarily caused by biosolids in Detroit Lake. But it may have been other things. It may have been other activities or non-point source pollution that was getting nitrates or whatever into the water that may have caused that. But what you need to do first is test and see it's there. What is the baseline? What you're going to do, and then you have to. Then you work backwards. It's all a methodology of working backwards to figure out what is the cause. What is the cause? So I think again, if we're doing the well testing, part of this would be, our concerns with biosolids and the implication of biosolids. We need to pick appropriate wells that could be implicated by the application of biosolids. And then that way you can at least know that you're next to a source that may be a problem there and see what kind of problems arise.
Other questions or comments? All right, we'll move on to constituent input. And again, I remind our individuals that please limit your comments to 5 minutes so that everybody has an equal opportunity. And who's first?
I'll be first.
All right.
Moving.
Welcome.
And I do it well. Hang on here. Oh, here. I brought you something to look at. Okay.
Oh my.
Cindy George. That was what was in our well, Mr. Belmont. You say.
Okay.
Now you know. Heavy metals. Look like some silk we've got. If you look at our layer, pass it on down to Terry. He'll recognize the soil sample.
Wow.
That was in our water. Now, many people think I'm sick, but I'm not. I do this for a purpose. Because our government has chosen, I do this in recognition of all those children that fought to save the water in Standing Rock and took our gas and took our abuse from this government. And this is considered an act of terrorism in this country anymore, to put a bandana on your face. So, we got a lot of issues in this town, and I've just found out something that I'm really, really concerned about, and that is the condition of this hospital. So I'll start with that. I went in and called in a grievance on Lincoln County Hospital. Actually, I went over to Amy Chapman's office and we sat and talked on quite a few issues. Come to find out, they're not allowed to go check the hospital. They can't go walk in there and pull a swab on bacteria. I thought that was really weird. She gave me a number for a state regulator. I called the state regulator. They're not allowed to check them either. This is run by a private corporation. And nobody is checking this hospital. So when Amy called me back yesterday, I asked her. She's very concerned. She says she's been fighting for years to try and get in there. Hey, I said, well then come join me. Let's do a walkthrough, Amy, please. You, because she said, I'm calling you as a citizen, Cindy, I care. I said, then come with me. Let's walk. Let's go take this. Not only that place, but that rehabilitation center that I've talked about before, my sister's talked about before. I turned them in for stealing medications from my mother's purse. They also took her Oxycontins in that facility and then told the doctor that, oh, they had sent them out with us. So we got called in. My mother's got a broken hip, 80 years old. We had to wheel her in so they could pull a pee test on her. Okay? Hadn't had one day's surgery. I'd take her out of there because it was so filthy. Okay? And what did this Newport Rehab tell my mother, the doctor? They sent him to Fred Meyers to be destroyed. So I went to Fred Meyers and asked him. They said, never. We would never take those medications back. And so I called, issued a grievance with the senior services, all of them. Nobody followed through, okay? And so that's what we've got over there. People, and I talked to the doctor that ran it. You know what he told me? And this was really freaky. Yeah, I know I have people with substance abuse around here. Oh, okay. Well, that's cool. So we'll accept that. We'll put them in to take care of our elders and leave them for bed sores and infections. So my neighbor came home. Her husband, old mill worker, been here all his life, had to take his wife out of there last week because the conditions were filthy. Not only that, but she was in that hospital, and they sent her out the door. They rushed her into emergency over in Corvallis. 3 months she was in ICU. Brought her back and put her in our beautiful rehab, and they had to take her out. So I'm going to look towards her doing a video for you gentlemen and women, and so you can start hearing from your community. Now, I attended the... Well, you go ahead and you cut me off on these issues, okay?
I'm asking you to respect.
That's fine. Does anybody want me out of here? I'm sure. Okay. So as far as the water, no one is testing for blue-green algae. I have been all over this town. I have requested it. I went to the meeting at the Marine Science Center, and the water guy says, hey, until we see the bloom, we don't have to. I call Newport, everybody. There's an emergency bill going out, and so when that emergency goes through, then they'll have to test. Well, what if it hits the system already? Has anybody looked at the front page of the paper?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And nobody has pulled one test. And we got a water bottling plant down there in Seal Rock that's bottling that stuff up. Okay? Toledo Water. So, I'm done, sir.
Thank you.
And you better do something. Because so far, nobody has done anything to stop and make sure you're not serving poison.
Okay. Thank you.
Well, you know, I've only got 5 minutes to tell a life story.
You're welcome to come back next week.
Oh, what good does it do me?
Anyone else?
Yeah. Excuse me.
Again,
my name is Alan Davis.
5 minutes, please.
I live in Logiston. Can I finish? You're about rude. First of all, Cindy, she's right. There's more than 23 classes of 200 toxic metabolites, I believe it's called. Current watering monitor method do not cover them. You have to have a special analytical method to cover these toxins. We're not, evidently, I doubt if Newport, Cleveland, and them are set up for that. We also took a drive last Sunday, went to Twin Bridges, Gibson Bridge by Gibson's, the one by the Alts Park, took multiple pictures. The algae is unreal. There's 52 pictures on Save Our Sluts River. It is disgusting how bad it is. There is absolutely no life, none. We're getting pictures from other people, canoers, rafters, kayakers. They're disgusting. You ought to look at our page. There's so many people not happy with what's going on. Second of all, Sluts Bay is a natural game refuge. It's protected by USC codes because it is a critical habitat for coho salmon. So, Mr. Belmont, you might want to look at that. And another thing that really puzzles me, we have copies. Thank you, Cindy, for these copies. From Biosolids, from Toledo, went through shipping. the mercury is went up almost a quarter. If you see the toxics in this, it's horrible. And they're putting these on our field, on fields, some fields out in Sletz. So therefore, are these Superfund sites because they've just been contaminated? You're laying all these mercury, chromium, you can have copies of this. There's numerous. And so all those fields are contaminated. So what about the resale value about these in the real estate? That's another problem. And here's my last, I'll try to get this done really quick. But under the National Pollutant Discharge Elimination System Waste Discharge Permit, it says in here, a person who knowingly discharges, places, or causes to place any waste into the waste of the state or in a location where the waste is likely to escape in the water of the, to the state, subject to his Class B punishable fine, not to exceed $200,000 and 10 years in prison. Well, they're doing this. There it is. There's your proof. You know, there you go. I've also been in contact with David Lewis. I don't know if you know him or not. He's the head, one of the head senior EPA research scientists. He's been in contact with us. He was fired for blowing the whistle because he said the EPA was falsifying, reports, misleading the public. He said it, there's nothing safe in this biosolids at all. He's been to Congress twice. He was asked to be President Trump's personal scientific advisor. I believe he turned it down. Smart man. That's how smart he is. You know, we also been in contact with the tribe, and my wife, Kayleen, will fill you on now how that went. And also, they're hiding behind the Right to Farm Act. And when it endangers people, that's pretty much cast it out. And what's right here, they're endangering everybody's all our lives. And as if you want to know what's in the water, because you said you're concerned about what was in the water, this is from the DEQ. We gave this to Toledo. And you know, you have arsenic, chlorophyll, copper, lead, selenium, zinc, alkalinity, which is, if you know what alkalinity is, well, that's raising acid in the water. It's raising up, and I'm really concerned on that because, you know, of course it has phosphate and phosphorus also, but what happens, it's going to start taking all the oxygen out of the water if it hasn't already. And if the pH reaches at 7% or 9%, everything's dead. And last time we took a check, one was 7.9 and one was 8, and we're going to do it again tomorrow. And so if it reaches 9, that's a totally dead river. We absolutely seen no life at all last Sunday. And somebody else took a lot of pictures, and they also said, one fish, and it was like not healthy. So basically our river is dying. And I already told you numerous toxins. You know, the federal government allows you to check for 9 toxins. And there's numerous toxins. There's hundreds and hundreds of the stuff in this biosolids. And everybody's drinking it, including the children. And, you know, it's bad news. Terry, you need to wake up. You should be listening to this.
Yeah, about 1 minute.
Okay, and one other thing. Claire, you talked to, if I believe, to Senator Wyden.
I did see him briefly on Sunday, but I didn't have an opportunity to discuss this issue with him.
Well, you quoted me. You sent me on Facebook a message, and you said, he asked me how things were going. Did you or did you not?
He meant personally. It was...
So you can take a minute and said, our Sletz River is being poisoned, and every citizen could possibly get poisoned and die, and children? Do you have a few minutes to do that?
No, he had staff with
well,
him.
Well, you know, you gotta resign if you're not protecting us. You really should, because there's children relying on you. That's disgusting.
I'm done. Okay. Thank you. Appreciate your respecting the time.
And you have copies of these, because this is what's in the biosolids.
Either that or we'll take copies and get
And there's laws too. Here if you need that, too. Because we need to work together.
Do you want that information back?
Or yes, I do need it back for our...
Copies of it and get it back.
Okay. I'll give you all this.
Thank you, Alan.
Thank you.
Next.
Colin, here we go.
Hi, Kayleen Davis, farmer at Lobston.
Welcome back.
Thank you.
I have a few things, and I don't know if I can keep them in five, but I'll do my best. I'll start with the Chalet Tribal Council. They were awesome. The minute we were on the agenda, so we had 15 minutes, but not one person looked at the clock or told us when our 15 minutes was done. They talked to us for 45. They were instantly interested, concerned, and took started talking about actions. They're really concerned. In fact, they even sent emails because we were running out of ink, and they printed out some pictures for us. They did our packets for us. They've been way helpful. I'm hoping that you'll have a chance to talk to them. They were not happy with Toledo. And maybe Toledo will listen better to their letter. I know you asked for them to respond back or send you copies of their reports, any of that. I filed a public request from Toledo. We went to Toledo's meeting. Toledo's meeting is, well, we listened to another PowerPoint by Paul Kennedy. I don't want to hear another PowerPoint from Paul Kennedy or any of the DQQ. If they're the president, how about they do their environmental impact study? Where is it? They're polluting the water. The river is polluted. So why you tell us you can't do anything? We see this. I have family in Sled's drinking the water. My pregnant granddaughter's drinking the water, getting ready to have our great-grandchild. You know what this does? We have a 20-year-old in Sled's, her early 20s, fighting breast cancer, drinking this water. Also raised on probably the wild game. What about the deer and the elk eating this? There's new studies out there on the biosolids and the food source. I kind of went out of my outline here, but thank you, Casey Miller, for printing out. This is the newest blog by Luca Vincent. Great person to follow. The Canadians are really leading a charge on this, and they're getting a handle on it, and they're changing things. They're getting it done. And they have some new information on a biosolid plant out there. I've been trying to save this information and forward it. I had tons of emails come back, so I don't really know who got what. I'm not paid to do this. I'm not in the administrative business anymore. So, okay, we'll go on. The Toledo meeting, they told us they weren't going to make a decision. They listened to us, sort of. Paul Kennedy led, we got one or two questions, and then that man ran. Had to be in Bend. He left. And when I say, he's got long legs, but I had to run to catch him before he could get out the door. And it's not that far. I was right up. Here at Autocrest, have you guys reached him? You said you reached all of them.
We sent a letter to
him. A letter to him. Okay. Well, I called, and through the DEQ, John Huntington is the owner. I found that out from, somebody in the DEQ. Finally got a hold of him. He's out of Troutdale. Didn't get to talk to him. Got his secretary, asked him, who can tell me? Because this one's, the biggest concern for Alan and I. This is the property closest to ours. And from what John Lindos, Sullivan has said, he wasn't applied properly. So I asked him, who can I talk to? When are you sending it? I want to know this. They gave me a number, Tom Rask. I called it. I didn't get to talk to Tom, but he's an attorney. So I don't think he knows when these biosolids are out. He's not running that plant. Depot Bay. Did you guys file for a Republic request for the hearing on Depot Bay? It's coming up. And I talked to Bob Discus. He's the writer of their permit. I've sent in ours to Andrea Bean, I believe, but this is the time, and he says he wants to hear from everybody. They gotta get at least 10 to get the public hearing. I'm hoping they already have 10, but did each of you do this? Because if you're really supporting us, then you should be doing this. We need to talk to him. We need to stop it. Sure. Okay. We've entered some new information that I shared. Also, there's also the chronic waste disease. Luckily, we haven't seen that in the elk, but Luca also sent us a report on that. It's a huge issue there. Their deer are dying. Our deer are very slim. I blamed it on the cougar. Now I wonder.
Our deer
are dying. Oh, yeah. We had herds. We used to have a huge, really, the deer up on our hill. Now we have very few. Okay, I sent you the pictures of the algae. We've had an outcry. Penelope Kazmarek did contact me. She has property on Wade Road. They went down to the riverfront. The algae was horrible. She said, what can I do to help? What resources do I have? I really haven't had a chance to find out totally what she can do. But I did mention Brent May. I'm guessing where Toledo's sending. Michael Adams has not told me exactly. He says Cusador. By the way, Jerry Cusador did come to the meeting. He says send it all to him. He understands us up in Logsdon because of the top grade that, it's not right on those farms, but his is right. They'll take it all, he says. At least he's below the intake, but he's above the refuge. So we drove down to Cusado's farm. We didn't see anywhere where the biosolids are being applied, so I'm guessing, and that's all I can do, that they're going to Brent Mays on Wade Road. We saw a Toledo truck up Logsdon Way, but it turned around and went back, and then somebody saw it go down the Kernville Road. Now maybe we were mistaken, or maybe they weren't quite sure where they were going. I'm not sure there. I told you about our new Canadian friends, and they really have some great stuff out there. A lot of resources. I'm really curious about Andy Grant. We toured his biosolid Class A plant. He told me he wasn't currently looking out in the Logsdon area, although I knew that he had contacted a farmer out there because they told me. In fact, his first words for me wasn't looking until I called him on the fact that I knew he had. So I'm really curious at who he has a permit with, because I just saw him, last week?
Monday. I don't know that he has a permit.
Okay. You know what Bob Discus, or one of the DEQ people, told me? They don't, or maybe it was Andrew himself, they don't have to have a permit for their Class A biosolids.
That may be the case, yeah.
They can go apply it wherever they want. You know what? They're dangerous, too. They can't get it all out. And even Andrew admitted he couldn't get everything out. I know my 5 minutes are probably up.
You've got 1 minute.
I have 1 minute. So what's this? You know, again, in this, they're up to 80,000 man-made chemicals in this stuff that can't get out. Wait, I almost forgot. The Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife, they're another one. I haven't contacted, but I'm really curious about them. Where are they? The elk, the deer, the geese, they're all in this. The river's dying. We're going to wait for the algae to bloom. We can't stop them. We don't have any strength. That's sad. Thank you for your help and for trying.
You want to leave that information?
Oh, yes. You want this? You want the pictures?
Are there new pictures? I think we have. Or are they on the website?
They're on the website.
Yeah, we've got
that. This one's good. Unfortunately, it cut off, but it shows a very clearly live crawdaddy and then the dead one under the algae. It's taken the water. Jason McWayne, I believe it. Forgive me, Jason, if I said your name wrong. He has some great pictures on there, but he shows some freshwater sponges that were there 2 years ago in the Sluts River. Anybody's been to this place? They're gone. They're
dead.
We'll
get the pictures off the website.
Yes, thank you. And I've been trying to keep all the resources there, but I have lots more that I would love to share. Thank you again.
Thank you. Next.
Thank you, Commissioners, for hearing me out. My name is Edward Bigger. In this capacity, I do not represent County Medicine. I personally went down from Twin Bridges. I did a kayak trip. I saw two crawdads. They look really sick. There's a lot of algae in the water. The water does look lifeless. In Sweden, they've got a system of taking care of the garbage. I'm not sure about biosolids. You can get on the internet, check it out. Sweden's way that they take care of their trash garbage. They've actually got a system. There's 1% that goes into the landfills. Maybe we could look at that. That's something to bring up. Maybe we can use that as a model. We'll check that out. Look it up. It's really sad. I'm afraid that once we start checking this river out, we're going to be past the point of no return. We're killing all of our babies, our animals, our children, our people. We wonder why we got all this every year. We got this algae bloom in the ocean. Maybe it's because we're doing all this stuff up in the hills and it's coming down into the ocean. So we got to protect ourselves. Let's act on this, guys. Ladies and gentlemen, please, please, guys. One thing that I'd like to point out, I mean, this is an ongoing issue, and I'm going to be at the Toledo City Council meeting tonight because I live in Toledo. I live right on the Jaquina River. So I'm going to move on to this. One thing that I've learned about this is about drugs and rehab and whatnot in our city, in our town, in our nation. Well, I'm not sure about any other states, but I believe that meth has been not decriminalized, but the penalties have been dropped.
Essentially from a felony.
From a felony to a misdemeanor. Yeah. And I, my sources have told me, and it's I get people that have come up and trust me and talk to me and tell me things that they wouldn't normally tell the police. And if you're a meth dealer out there, you hear me talking, I do work with the police, and I'll tell the police anything I can to get that poison off of our streets. The price has gone down 50%. So, on the streets. And that's just since it's changed, because there used to be what or people say, no felonies for free. Well, now it's not even a felony. So I have brought to the attention of a business owner, Raj, from the Chevron here in Newport, that his employees were doing meth. In the last October, I've been attacked 3 different times. I tell children, if they see me out there in my cannabis suit, don't do this. Don't use marijuana. Learn from my mistakes. The trouble that I've got into over drugs. And here I sit in a cannabis suit talking about drugs. I might be considered a contradiction of terms. I speak from the heart. We need help in our town. I see new people coming in and coming out. They're on this meth, they're on heroin. We've got fentanyl. The dealers have been putting heroin in the meth for years to keep people coming back. We got all these shops opening up selling kratom. Kratom, if you eat kratom, you use kratom, it builds in your body, it builds a toxicity and kills you. And here we've got stores selling alcohol, tobacco, kratom, all this stuff, and meth, and I'm being attacked. I don't appreciate that, and I pray for those that have attacked me and put their hands on me. I've bumped my head with local police saying that, oh, they said you did it first. You put your hands on this guy first. I've had these guys screaming at me, yelling at me, giving me a hard time ever since I told the owner of the Chevron, Raj, that the people are doing meth in his store. Nothing's been done about it, and I pray that there will be a change. One thing about cannabis, and I'd like to put this out there, www.theexitdrug.com. Cannabis can help people get off of these hard drugs, but we need a place to put them first. We don't have, they took down Truman. City says that the hospital's atrocious. Who would want to go there? But it's even better than nothing. I see all these people coming in. An influx. The summer comes, then the homeless come. People want to move into our city, our towns, and I've seen a lot of people too come up from the streets here, get jobs, raise families, get off the dope, get out of the state, and it gives me hope. It gives me hope. I would like to ask you ladies and gentlemen, please to really listen to us about the water. It's scary. It's scary. It's terrible that this is happening, and that laws are being broken. You know, people say, well, why didn't they do anything about it? And there's always usually one reason why not, and because they're making money. People are making money off the misery of others, and I really sincerely believe that we need to change that. And I do hope that I can change the way that people look at others or people that use cannabis. I use it daily as a medicine. I use RSO at night to sleep. I have fibromyalgia, rheumatoid arthritis, PTSD, 5 hernia operations, lower bone spurs in my back, carpal tunnel. And I don't need all these opiates and all this stuff. I don't want it. I don't need it. I believe that cannabis can be used if you use it correctly, if you don't use it as a crutch. Oh, I had a bad day. I got to go smoke a joint. That isn't how it works. It shouldn't be. It's not how it works for me. About a minute. Hey, doing pretty good. I would I'd like to ask you guys a question. Is there any way that we could change the format of the commissioner's meeting here that people might have more than 5 minutes?
If you want more than 5 minutes, make an appointment with a commissioner.
Make an appointment with a commissioner. Hear that, guys?
They wouldn't let me in, ever.
So if that doesn't work, Commissioner Hunt, what do we do?
Bullshit.
If that doesn't work, then a commissioner can't, we won't talk to some, like Cindy says.
You're welcome to come back next week. We limit to 5 minutes so that everybody has an equal time, and we're trying to be fair.
Is there a way we can, you guys, we could like make it 10 for future sessions or anything like that? So people don't feel so rushed?
I guess that would be a discussion we can have as commissioners. My feeling is that 5 minutes, and much of what we've heard, we appreciate, we've heard before. I'm comfortable with 5 minutes. It's been the practice for a long time.
Okay, but is there a way to change that, sir?
If two of the three commissioners, I guess, decided to.
We can talk about it.
Thank you very much. Yeah. And I always want to show you very much respect.
The other way to contact us is through emails.
Yes, sir. And please remember, guys, theexitdrug.com.
Okay.
Do the next right thing, guys, for yourselves and people around you. Okay. God bless.
Okay. Thank you. Next.
My name is Barry Height. I live in Glen Eden Beach. I would just like to elaborate a little bit more upon what Eddie was saying. And thank you, Eddie, and thank you, Cynthia, for what you're doing. This issue of cannabis is a very, very significant issue, because what people aren't discussing is the recent medical science information about the endocannabinoid system. So science now says that the endocannabinoid system, have you guys ever heard of this term?
No.
Doug? No. Terry? It's spelled ENDO, cannabinoid system. It was found in the late 1980s. Early 1990s, it became much more common. However, because of the federal issue of it being illegal at that, that's a big problem, so the doctors haven't been able to talk to the public at large. So we've got some significant issues going on with our health information, because now the medical world knows, to bring this attention, you know, this to your attention, is that this endocannabinoid system is considered a regulating system, right? So the healthier it is by way of reconnecting to a plant chemistry, the healthier our bodies perform. So this movie called The Exit Drug, it should be called The Exit Medicine, because really it's about nurturing our bodies, our biology, and from the perspective of science now, it is proven beyond a doubt in this 15-minute little documentary, we will tell you this, that it's beneficial to our health. Specifically, our mind begins to think clearly, much more clearly, because our brain now is being given nutrition to help that thinking process. We become more mindful. And maybe the thought occurs to all of you, what's it mean to be a human being today, right? We've got water quality issues, significant issues on all levels. Humanity is at a turning point of evaluating what it means to be in service to one another, right? You guys are in a very significant place right now. Water being the most important science of our biology and our health, right? Right next door to oxygen, okay? So, you know, I mean, really we are challenged now, all of us, to look inside and to develop that community, teamwork, toward a better tomorrow for future generations, right? It's not going to take just one or two. It's going to take an entire community, a country, a planet. We've got issues that are outrageously challenging right now. So please look at this little 15-minute look at something that, number one, can help the 91 people a day that are dying due to an opiate addiction. The resistance that we have to accept this plant, right, to help those people that are in despair, they need this chemistry to help their brain function. It's simple as that. So we've got to talk to the recovery communities. We've got to talk to many, many different communities to get out of resistance of accepting this drug. And the good news is we're standing on the shoulders of so many leaders, thought leaders, that got us to this legal perspective to even talk about this. So have empathy for people like Idaho, people within the state of Idaho, or all across the country. I mean, this conversation goes on and on and on in terms of how it can help children as well as every human being right now to think in relationship to one another. That's what this chemistry does. of this plant cannabis. Thank you.
Thank you. Any other comments?
I know you're gonna.
I know you're gonna cut me off,
but I'm gonna say this anyway, because Terry, you need to hear this. I heard the one fact at the Marine Science Center that had brought me home in tears. I cried all night. That mill uses the volume of the entire Yaquina River every single day in that
right,
mill.
Cindy, that's enough. Any other comments?
I left out one.
No, Alan, you had your 5 minutes.
Douglas County never does this. Douglas County never interrupts. They will sit there for 45 minutes and have people in their face and they never interrupt.
Well, it's about
show some respect.
All right. It's about the plastic that I talked to Andrew over at Newport.
Okay.
He doesn't care. They can't get the microplastics out. And it rolls around on the bottom of the ground. The microorganisms eat it. The fish eat it.
Okay.
The plastic.
We're adjourned.
Yep.